and will continue it in the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. My main collaborator in this work was Benoit Roman. Now in Paris, we did the experiments in the plastic sheets together and tried to think of the origin of all this thing that I will show. Mike Marder did the numerical simulation that I will present here. And everything was done on, together with Harry Sweeney, the head of Center for Nonlinear Dynamics. So I will try to do things very quickly. I'll start with motivation. Why? What am I talking about? Why is it interesting? Then I will describe the experiment. I will let you do the experiment yourself. And I will end this part with some suggestion or a claim of what is going on. I will try to support it by numerical results. Then I will try to spend some time briefly and quickly with some geometrical discussion about the geometrical aspects of this phenomenon. And I will try to spend some time showing some experiments or demonstrations in plants and gel sheets. So I will talk about wavy or wrinkled sheets. And we find wrinkled sheets in many systems. You can take originally flat sheet and apply some boundary condition on it, then it would wrinkle. You can attach some flexible sheet on a substrate, and when this substrate is deformed, then you will find wrinkles. And many times you actually find sheets which are wavy or, let's say, wrinkled, even when they are free. They are free in space. Of course, some of them would have some internal structure, but I would like to talk about sheets that are free and still wrinkled. We find it in this kind of marine snails, and there I would like to draw your attention to several scales of waviness on the edge of those creatures. We find large-scale oscillation and then a smaller one near the edge. Same kind of pattern we find in lichens. And in a way, this would be the framework of the thing. What is it? Where it comes from? What do you need for that? I would like to mention that in botany, biology, usually people would say, well, this three-dimensional structure is built at a three-dimensional structure, meaning you shape and you grow a wavy surface by tell it grow up, grow down, grow up, grow down. And if it is very, very complex, then you need a very complex code to build this shape. I would like to suggest some alternatives. And for that, the framework is, for me, is this differential geometry of plants, and for physicists, differential geometry is Einstein. So all mathematicians, I ask you to forgive me for this. So now I will ask you all to take this sheet of plastic and slowly tear it. Try not to shear it too much. Just simply tear the plastic sheet and then look on the edge of it. Just really, just brutally, yes, that's it. Okay, this is the experiment. Now, when you look on the edge, you will see something of this type. You will see waviness, but not in one scale, but more than that. If you did it very slowly, you will see probably three length scales. If you did it more rapidly, you will see two or so. It depends on the plastic, it depends on the thickness, depends on your tearing condition, but when you do it in a controlled experiment, maintaining just pure tension without shearing, keeping the symmetry of the problem up and down, left and right, and the velocity, steady state propagating crack, you can find states. You can find two generation state, three generation state, and when in a very thin plastic sheet, you can find even six generations of waviness. This is the full scale. If you resume on this one, we will see still three generations included within this small section. Another interesting thing is that this is very similar to what we see in many, many, many plants and leaves. This is the plastic sheet front and side, lettuce, beet, many, many, many other natural sheets, which have the three-dimensional structure, which is very similar to the plastic sheets. And we would like to ask, is there a connection? Clearly, we don't claim that a leaf is generated by tearing or anything like that, but I believe there is a connection. So the experiment very quickly, it is basically what you just did, just in a more controlled way. We clamp the plastic sheet between steel rods, make a notch, and then pull one of the sides with a motor, either with constant force or constant velocity, and there's a crack which propagates from left to right from the initial notch we prepared. And here we see the tip propagating to the right. You can already see that it is flat here, and the waviness appears just behind during the relaxation of the sheet. We can use different thicknesses and with different dimensions of the plastic sheet. Afterwards, we put the buckled or the wavy sheet on a stage with an optical profilometer. We can map the surface amplitude along lines. We then convert all this measurement to measurements along lines of constant distance from the edge along the surface. Meaning, if you look from the side on your sample, you will see that there is waviness up and down. Because of the up and down waviness, there is inward and outward waviness as well. So if we put a profilometer scan, we will work in straight lines in lab frame, but it won't be, these won't be straight lines or parallel lines on the sheet coordinate system. So we convert for that, and then we have a amplitude at each point, X and Y. I will call X the coordinate parallel to the edge, and Y the distance from the edge. Then we can make FFT and get amplitude, wavelengths, and so. So first thing, we just look at the sample. And this is a sample of saran wrap, very thin one, and this is the full front view of the full wavelength. Now we will, every time we will zoom on, let's say, the left shoulder, and we will zoom in a constant factor, and this time it is 3.2, and this is what we see. We zoom again, and we zoom again, and again, and again. So what we find is a self-similar structure, a fractal-like structure, which forms the edge of this plastic sheet. And I would like to say that, to mention that this fractal, I believe, is an equilibrium configuration. It's not a driven system which is currently in a fractal, has some fractal scaling, but once we will let it relax, it would go back to some smooth shape. This is the best the sheet can do to minimize its energy, this complex shape. I would like also to mention that this unique scaling and this perfect scaling is specific for this kind of sheet. We can generate different cascades of waves with different scaling, and some of them will not be perfect fractals, but I will go to it later. So don't overemphasize this factor and the perfect scaling. So how do we shape thin sheets? One way is really to build a thin sheet like a three-dimensional object with wave. This is a very complex way to do it. Another way is to push it, to bend it, and then we make an arc. And a third way is simply to compress it. We keep the symmetry of the problem, but the solution breaks it and pops up or down. So why does it happen? If we consider a segment of a thin rod or so, or a plate, and we prescribe displacement on its boundary, it can be compressed in plane, and then it will be just a spring energy, which will be proportional to the thickness. If we double the thickness, we will double the energy of the system. However, it can use the other dimension that it has and buckle out of the plane, and then it might, let's say, keep the original, its original length along the center plane, not being compressed, keeping its length. Think about a ruler keeping its length. But then because of thickness, the arcs above it will be stretched, the arcs below it will be compressed, and if we integrate this elastic energy, we will get energy which scales like the thickness to the third power. So I will call it bending energy. It is associated with curvatures. And we have this stretching energy. I will refer to energy which is actually generated by changing the distances along the center plane, the two-dimensional plane of the sheet. So this is fine, and we are very familiar intuitively with this mechanism because we really apply boundary conditions, so it buckles. So no surprise, but these sheets in your hands are completely free now. They are free in space. They can adapt any shape. You don't constrain them in any way, and still I would like to say that they are naturally or spontaneously buckled even without any boundary condition or any loading on them. So how can it be? So let's build this quasi two-dimensional sheet by attaching segments of different length with some mismatch in their internal length to form a two-dimensional sheet. So if this sheet is still confined to the plane, without don't pay attention to these straight profiles or anything, it's just a demonstration. So we will find this part will be compressed, this part will be under tension, and again the energy will be linear with the thickness. But maybe the sheet can do something else. Maybe it can adopt a shape of this kind. So the back side will be of its nearly of its original length, this one, and the front side will be longer, and maybe it can find a better configuration, nearly no stretching but bending, and then again the energy will scale like the thickness to the third power, and if the thickness is small enough, this energy will be much lower than this energy which is linear with the thickness. Or for any configuration, we can take the energy, the thickness to be smaller, smaller, smaller. Bending energy goes down much faster than stretching, so at a certain time, this will be preferable. So a small demonstration, take elastic rubber sheet of different lengths, stretch them, make a two-dimensional sheet of them, and then let them go, let it be free, and it's spontaneously wrinkled or buckled, and it is mainly, again, just a demonstration. So buckling or wrinkling can occur in sheets even without any loading from outside if there is some mismatch of their internal length or some special geometry of the distances along the sheet, then it can spontaneously wrinkle. Do we have these conditions in our plastic sheets? So now you can look at those plastic and look in front of the light and you will see that there is this opaque or white region near the torn edge. This is a region where an irreversible deformation occurred. This is a plastic material, so it flows. Near the tip of the crack, there are very, very strong stresses. We can visualize them by put cross-polarizer and use the fact that plastic is optically active. It rotates the polarization vector of the light. So here we, just without the details, this is a way of visualizing deformations in the plastic. So we see large deformations near the tip and then less and less outside. If it would be an elastic material, when we would unload it, it would all go back to its original brownish color. But when we do so, we see there is a zone, a big zone, much larger than the thickness of the sheet, which was deformed in an irreversible way and more severely near the edge and less outside, and you can see it in your sample. So we have the chances that by luck, this tearing process does change the distances on the sheet in the same way like we demonstrated with those rubber strings. It is longer near the edge, it is shorter away. So we print dots on the surface of our plastic sheet before we put it on the machine. And then we can track and follow them and see what is really the deformation field during this process of the tearing. So one thing which I want to mention, it is very important, we find out that this process, this deformation field is completely invariant in the X direction, meaning there are no oscillations of the crack tip, there are no instabilities along the X direction. The entire deformation field is just a function of the distance from the edge, not of distances along the propagation direction. So if look at these four dots with this distance between them, now imagine all this pattern of dots flowing downward on this wedge. This is the kind, this is what happens. So when they will be here, their distance will be this one. And it is an irreversible deformation. So what this tearing is doing, it redefines distances along the surface within this plastic zone. And it makes the edge too long near the edge, and then this distance between four dots decreases and decreases until we go outside of this plastic zone and where we keep this original distance. So we print a finer grid and we track and we measure, and we find this kind of profile. This is the ratio between the original length in the x direction of the dot and versus the distance from the edge y. And we see that away from the edge it is 1. No deformation occurred, but there is near the edge, there is an increase, a steeper and steeper and steeper increase of the length in the x direction as we approach the edge. We can write it in terms of the geometry of the sheet, in terms of metric. If we want to describe distance between two dots on the surface, before we would take distance in the x direction square, number of dots in the y square, this will be the distance in terms of units of distance. In the, between those dots, like r squared equals x squared plus y squared. But now we deformed our distances of the x by this function f, which is a function only of y. So we have a new metric on the sheet. This irreversible deformation during the turn defined a new metric on this two-dimensional or quasi-two-dimensional sheet. This metric is very simple. I would like to emphasize it. It depends only on the distance from the edge, and it is monotonically and smooth and everything. And we would like to say, take such a metric, put it on an elastic sheet, and you will get minimum of energy configuration, which are those buckling cascades. And take different curves, you will get different shapes. Once we say so, it is immediately relevant to plants because you can generate curved metrics or metrics of this kind by growth processes. You don't need to take flat sheet and deform it. If the leaf grows too much near the edge, it will adapt this kind of geometry, and then because of elasticity, it must adapt these complex shapes. So these are simulations. I will do it very, very quickly because I see I don't have much time and I want to get to the later stages. It is basically connecting springs, dots with springs, give it some thickness, so you pay some bending energy. And the way to define the metric is to say that the rest length of a spring in the x direction increases as function f towards the edge. And you can feed it with different functions f. They all go to 1 away from the edge. They all go to 2 or to something like 2 near the edge. And you can get different configurations of minimum of energy, and they are this kind of buckling cascade. So this kind of metric on an elastic sheet, homogeneous and everything, is sufficient to generate these kind of shapes as equilibria. Another thing, different functions will generate different shapes. Another just demonstration, the entire three-dimensional structure is very similar in the simulations and the experiments. Now we have the questions. So what's going on? I mean, why? How comes I take nearly the simplest metric I could think of, except flat one, and the sheet is free, and I fit it with this featureless metric, and then it spontaneously wrinkles and forms this very, very, very complex shape. I mean, can't it find any better configuration? I mean, why paying so much bending energy, having those small wrinkles, while I just nearly don't prescribe anything on it. The other direction will be, okay, if it is so simple and so powerful, maybe it is in use in nature. Maybe those leaves and lichens and snails, they actually form by this mechanism and not by a very complex genetic code which build the entire shape. So to answer those things, I will briefly say and briefly describe my suggestion. What happens here is this. Thin elastic sheets are, you can say, they are very nervous creatures. If you take a disk and you simply just want to pack it into a sphere, then suddenly it forms, if the sphere is too tight, then it forms structure. Or a different system which was studied by people here, if you take a disk and you try to make a blister out of it, like to shrink its perimeter too much, then you will get a cascade of wrinkles. And meaning, once you cause some problematic geometrical condition on a sheet, you can get very, very complex behavior, even if your constraints are very, very simple. So clearly, we don't have constraints here. We don't see any constraints, but I will say that there are constraints. The constraints are these. We prescribe the metric. It is non-flat. It is what we just saw. And in Euclidean space, we cannot find a surface with smooth surface with this metric. So now this sheet finds itself in a very similar condition as those constrained sheets, and it responds by wrinkling. I hope Shankar tomorrow before lunch will be able to say more about that. I will show that some common shape of leaves are might be a result of this principle. And okay, I will skip this thing. And what do we do with differential geometry? So we have two things which I will use. We have the metric which actually specifies distances between points on the surface. And we have shape in our Euclidean space, which is characterized by principal curvature and their product, the Gaussian curvature. So we have the surface, at each point we define principal curvature, their product, Gaussian curvature. This is what I will use. And Gauss told us that these two things, the metric and the Gaussian curvature, are linked. They are completely, the Gaussian curvature can be expressed by the metric coefficients. In other words, any configuration without stretching has some determined Gaussian curvature, or alternatively, distances, prescribing distances, says a lot about possible shapes. Now, remember that we want to minimize our stretching deformations because we multiply them by this huge coefficient thickness, and we can generate very large bending deformations because we multiply them by very, very small coefficient. So we would like to minimize this entire thing, and clearly we would look to for configuration with nearly zero stretching. This is a geometrical question. Now we can use these relations. We define distances, we can ask what are the shapes. So let's use a Gauss term to our metric of this shape. It becomes very simple, and simply we see that the Gaussian curvature is minus the second derivative over the function of this f. So remember the shape of this function. So f prime prime is positive. So we see that in the entire deformed zone we have a negative Gaussian curvature. It is not zero, first of all. So that's why it would go out of plane spontaneously without any loading, because this is its geometry. But there is something which is not clear. I mean, this is completely invariant along the edge. And our solution breaks this symmetry again and again and again and again. So again, we need another mechanism, another input to understand this. And we would like to ask the question, can one always generate a surface with this prescribed curvature along its edge? And then we consider two scenarios. One, yes, there are surfaces, and the observed buckling cascades, as I call them, are the best or the minimum bending, or nearly the minimum bending, no stretching configuration, I will call it. Meaning, they are very, very close to shapes without stretching. Bending will be some perturbation, like if you compress a ruler, you will find a single arc. And, well, if it is thicker, then there will be some compression on the ruler. The shape won't be a perfect no stretching arc. But if you decrease your thickness, the compression will go down and down and down. The ruler will keep its original length, and you will, but the shape won't change much. You will find features of the size of this lateral size, the distance between your hands. You won't find small wavelengths or anything like that. So the thickness, wavelength, or any scaling of the pattern shouldn't depend on the thickness. However, if no smooth configurations exist with that prescribed metric, meaning any configuration with no stretching must involve very, very, very small wrinkles, like we heard yesterday in several talks, then we go again back to this scenario which we heard yesterday. You need to balance. You need to balance. You pay bending energy, but you don't want to pay too much. So on the other hand, you don't want to have too long wavelengths because you pay stretching energy. So you will have scaling which depends on the thickness explicitly. You make it thinner, you will make it finer. I'll skip that. So some support for this later scenario if we take those same metrics which we just used for the simulation before. But our sheet now is infinitely thin. This is an example of a configuration of nearly zero energy. And as we see, it is wrinkled everywhere. Before, remember, we found very long wavelengths away from the edge. Now, everywhere we find small wavelengths. The sheet would like to find just to be wrinkled everywhere. Because of thickness, it doesn't do it. It compromises. And the more, for me, more important, as experimentalist, more important result is this. Without details, because it will take me too much time, let's see what is the scaling of the entire pattern. Does it have an explicit dependence on the thickness of the sheet or not? So we can plot the wavelength at a given place versus, let's say, a length scale. We build this length scale with or without thickness dependence. And I won't get into the details. But only when we allow the wavelengths to depend explicitly on the thickness, roughly as a power of 1/3, we find a collapse of our data. If we do not allow a thickness dependence, we will find some dependence, some curve like that, and this is the RMS of the data from a linear dependence, and we see that this is the minimum at this roughly 1/3 power, and if we do not allow thickness dependence, we get much, much larger scatter. So this is another support, though not very, very, very solid. So let's go now to first to understand what's going on. Why there wouldn't be a solution for the metric? And another thing is, let's go to the growing things. So now we will take our metric of this kind, hyperbolic metric, put it on a cylinder instead of on a sheet. So if we think about plants, let's consider a ring of cells, and we build a cylinder by a growth law. The next ring above it will be larger, it will grow exponentially. The number of cells will be proportional to the cells before, very sensible growth law. So to build such a cylinder, we will get more and more cells. We will open up like a funnel shape. And if our growth law is purely exponential, this shape is called pseudosphere. It has a constant negative curvature opposite to the sphere. And we can see we have a large curvature here, so we put a negative small curvature here. This small negative curvature increases the radius here. This curvature decreases, so we need to bend faster outward, faster and faster and faster, till we reach the horizon. And this is the end of this axially symmetric shape. It is known geometrically that you cannot continue. Because if you flip downward, then you suddenly are in a positive curvature shape. So this is the end of it. But the cells keep on dividing according to the same law. They don't care about geometrical shape. And then we speculated that then there should be, this is the end of this smooth shape, and we should find this petunia-like shape, and all from this constant growth law, which has nothing, obeys all symmetries of the problem, and still you can generate those shapes. So we can say a few things about what are the conditions for this transition. I don't have time for that. I will go forward. And we do experiments. What do? We take what is called environmentally responsive gels. These are gels like polyacrylamide. Let's make a tube, a thin tube out of it. And once we put this tube in an acetone environment, it shrinks a lot. So once we make this tube, shrink it, and then take it and put it, and just carefully with the edge, we touch water. Again, we let water diffuse inside. So if we will get a gradient of the water concentration, which will be coupled to the swelling properties of the gel, and we hope to get this kind of new metric, which is now defined by concentration, but by this water field, or the concentration field, and we will use it. There are some other more elaborated techniques where we can control better, but I will not tell about them today. So these are examples, simulation and a gel experiment where we just reach the horizon, meaning you can show that the criterion is this. if you take your cylinder and you integrate minus 2 pi Gaussian curvature over it, you will reach this limit. I didn't show that, but it is very easy to see. Now, let's go beyond that threshold. Integrate more negative curvature on the surface. And this is the simulation, again, exponential. This is the gel. This transition appears suddenly. You see nothing, and then suddenly you put it more, and suddenly, puck, this a length scale appears on the edge. You didn't put anything like that by hand, and you obeyed all the symmetries, and this suddenly, it's very nice to see how it appears. Suddenly you found a length scale, a wavelength. And from my parents' garden, I just like this similarity, but I would like to suggest it might be relevant. Another thing more serious into plants that we can do is this. Let's take innocent flat leaves and manipulate them. What we will do, we will put auxin. It's a growth hormone in plants, which is usually extensively used in agriculture when you uniformly apply it, so the entire plant grows faster. But we will apply it only along the edge of the leaf. And then hopefully it won't diffuse too much. Hopefully we will generate a gradient of concentration of auxin more near the edge, less inside. Then hopefully the leaf will respond by growing too much near its edge, forming this kind of a metric, and then hopefully it will wrinkle. So this is an example from eggplants. These are the leaves. This is what these leaves look like without any treatment, and this is what happens during time after this application. You see that they do wrinkle near their edge, and I didn't proceed with this work, but I intend to do it in a more controlled way. But this is some support or demonstration that it might be relevant in leaves. Another thing you can do, you can study the geometry of naturally wrinkled leaves. So this is a flat leaf, a slightly wavy leaf, and this is a bad photo, but this is a leaf with few generations, and this is a bay leaf, with, even with small length scale, a waviness near the edge. What we do, we cut slices parallel to the edge. Simple, cut carefully along the edge. So we get this, we get this, and we get that. Now what we do, we flatten them. We want to know what is the curvature of along those lines. And since these are three-dimensional, it's hard to see. So let's sandwich them between two plexiglass plates. And this is what we see in the flat leaf. It's very easy. The small arc is inside, and the arc radius increases outside. But in those wrinkled leaves, what we see is that the large arc is inside, and the small arc is outside. And these lines should be parallel, actually, in this order. So clearly you cannot do it in a plane. This is typical to highly, let's say, hyperbolic surfaces, and this is the highly wrinkled one. You see what small radius of curvature you actually have on the leaf. If there would be an ant going along the edge of that leaf, it should turn all the time to the left. This is not a straight line. This is what is called the geodesic curvature along this line, and it is of a very small radius, and actually this is a way to visualize it. Again, this is roughly the same thing. Now I marked the ups and downs along the edge, and we made this cut, and you see this. It is the same thing. But what I would like to emphasize here is that when you look at the tissue here, it is nearly circular. So if you think what the cells did, they didn't break the symmetry. They grew the same way nearly everywhere along the edge. This leaf would be completely flat and simple if it would be, let's say, in four dimensions. But we took it and placed it here, and this is the constraint. It cannot be flat, though nothing happened. The cells grew just uniformly, but still this shape must appear because of these geometrical and elastic constraints. So another thing. People did much more serious work than I did until now, though in some different orientation. Apparently there is a gene which balances the growth distribution, growth size distribution along the leaf and keep it flat, keep it flat all the time. If you knock this gene off, like these people did, then you find very wrinkled and deformed leaves. So, and again, all this gene does is really just distribute growth sites, let's say, along, again, a two-dimensional model. It doesn't break symmetries, it doesn't tell it go up or down, it simply distributes where to grow and where not. So this is another support that this is actually in action in leaves. I will just like go back to these small lichens, for instance, this very thin creatures without any structures, and they want to be big. If they grow too much and they are flat, they would collapse. They don't have like leaves, they don't have those rods to support them. So the other way to, for instance, they can do it is by forming like a wavy roof shape. So how they can do it, all they need is just to grow too much near the edge and so on. These are the conclusions. I think I don't have more time. Thank you.